It's funny, I was talking to a woman recently and she said, I love this concept of hiding. I love the work that you're doing, Ruth. And as a leader, I will never unhide to my team. And I said, okay, why? And she said, because I don't trust them. And it got me into the space of thinking, Steve, that either she has the wrong team or she's the wrong leader. Because if we can't trust our teams, why are we in this business? Because that's our job, is to build teams that trust us, that work with us, that get us to our next level in terms of a company. And so how do we create those spaces? And it's by leaders going first and being vulnerable.
You're listening to the ISF Podcast, for your organization's better cybersecurity. Your host, ISF CEO Steve Durbin, is an expert in leadership, business culture transformation, and cyber strategies for today's top enterprises. I'm producer Tavia Gilbert. Today, author and disability diversity expert Ruth Rathblot offers a fresh perspective on how we understand and approach diversity in the workplace. She and Steve discuss how DEI can benefit both your culture and your business, and they share practical tips for leaders looking to build a more inclusive environment.
So, Ruth, it's lovely to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
Now, the topic that we're going to be talking about today is diversity, something that obviously is very topical. Pretty much every business leader out there has a perspective on it. So I think it would be really helpful right at the beginning if you could just define diversity for us so that everybody understands what we're talking about. Because I think you've got a somewhat expanded definition of it, haven't you? Rather than just perhaps the more traditional, if I could put it that way, perspective.
That's a big question, Steve, in terms of defining diversity and trying to capture it all. I think you're right. I think there is a need for an expanded definition of diversity. And I say that as someone who has felt excluded from diversity conversations. It's interesting, Steve, a few years ago, I was in a conversation about diversity and leadership. And I asked a very naive question as a leader. I said, do you see me as diverse? Mm-hmm. And the answer back was, I don't know, you're a woman. And right. I said, yeah, that's that gender checkbox of diversity. Often when we talk about diversity, we talk about race, we talk about gender, and maybe we'll talk about sexual orientation as part of the conversation. And then my follow-up question was, what about my disability? I was born with a limb difference. I hid it for 25 years. But I asked the question, what about my disability? Because often disability is missing from the conversation on diversity. Right. And when I asked that question, Steve, the answer back was, well, we don't really see you like that. And I said, not asking to be seen as anything. I'm asking for it to be acknowledged as part of the diversity conversation. Because to me, the definition of diversity is different perspectives and different experiences. That's what true diversity is, difference. And so as I've gone out and started to talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion, and belonging, that conversation of how do we value different perspectives? How do we value different experiences and make room for them? Because that's what diversity truly is.
I would agree with you. I mean, I think I've always had, particularly at the ISF, you know, a very, very expanded view of diversity. And I think I've always found that it is the combination of all of those different things that you've just been talking about that actually brings a degree of richness to the environment, to teams that work collaboratively together, because you get so many different perspectives. And so I suppose I tend to be a little bit surprised when I come across other organizations that haven't perhaps gone down that same route, or, in my opinion, worse, have gone down the checkbox approach to things. So tell us a little bit about how you've gone about trying to evangelize this much more expansive perspective.
Well, after that first conversation and the questions I asked, I started to reach out to my corporate partners. I was, for 25 years, a New York City nonprofit leader who raised a lot of money with and had great partnerships with corporations in New York City that had global presences. So I started to ask the question, how are you talking about diversity? What does that mean to you? And I was often finding that disability was missing from the conversation. And one of my really great corporate partners invited me into their inclusion week, their first ever inclusion week, and said, just come and tell your story. And Steve, I was a nonprofit leader who I worked on providing access and opportunity for young people to mentoring and to college access and college success. I didn't really think I had a story. And so when I said to my contact, I said, well, what story should I tell? And he said, the one that you've shared with me, that you actually hid your hand for 25 years. You hid your limb difference from everyone for 25 years. Share part of that story. And when I went in and did that first presentation, and I think the New Yorkers in your audience, and maybe those in different cities will understand, when someone offers you a free car ride somewhere, you take it because you're like, mm-hmm. I'll take a car ride. So I went in and did the presentation and shared my story. And what was amazing is two things happened, Steve. One is people said, thank you so much for talking about disability as part of the conversation, both the visible like yours and the non-apparent disabilities that we often don't have conversation about. And the second thing that has hit me now that I've talked to companies globally, like Facebook and Bloomberg, et cetera, Barclays, is this idea of hiding. That most of us are hiding something about ourselves. And sometimes the way we define diversity contributes to people hiding part of themselves. It can be about disability, not feeling included, age, not being included. So as we start to use that as a framework of diversity and how do we have a conversation, I've started to say, okay, so what are we hiding? Because that's the first step. It's almost the step before really good DEI work is understanding your own thoughts about where you have felt different, understanding your own feelings about difference as the precursor to getting into really good DEIB work is that understanding step. So that's where I start with people is this idea of what are you hiding? How do we start to create cultures of unhiding so that people feel safe, psychologically safe and safe to share those things about themselves that are different.
So let's dig into that a little bit, Ruth. I mean, hiding, you know, interesting concept, particularly when you talk about things like physical disability, right? What are the sorts of things that you've seen or you experience where people are hiding? How might we spot that? Because, you know, disability isn't always immediately apparent, is it? I mean, if we're talking about things like neurodiversity and that kind of thing. So tell us a little bit more about the hiding.
Yeah. And I might even add to that, even with visible disabilities, people can be hiding, even because I've had a conversation with people in the disability community who say, well, I'm in a wheelchair or I'm blind or I'm deaf. Like you can tell I have a disability. I'm not hiding anything. And my response to that is always, do you share those parts of your day that are challenging? Do you share those parts of the successes that you've had, even the small successes that you think someone else would think, oh, that's stupid. Or, wow, I don't need to know that. Like, do you share those parts of your day with people and your journey? And they say, no, not often. That's part of hiding. Steve, as I've gone on this journey of talking about hiding, people have shared with me so many stories of the things they're hiding, whether it be disability, whether to your point. And it's not about necessarily, you can't tell because people get really good at not sharing the parts of themselves. What I have found is there are three kind of pieces about hiding. One is it's universal. Most of us are hiding something. And Deloitte actually did a study in 2013, and then they did an updated study in 2023 on this concept of hiding, or they call covering. Mm-hmm. And they found that 60% of us are covering part of ourselves in the workplace. It can be our backgrounds. It can be our our physical appearance we can be hiding. It can be our relationship status. People have told me about hiding their financial backgrounds, their family backgrounds, things that they're so afraid that they fear judgment and rejection. So hiding is universal. It happens. I mean, people hide their religion. They hide their age. They hide their relationship status. So many things. I was on a plane recently and a guy sitting next to me. I'm one of those people, Steve, I don't know about you, but I like talking to people on planes. I'm not somebody who puts my headphones in or puts my hoodie on or my mask. And I started asking him, you know, we got to the part of the conversation where we talked about what we do for work. And he shared that he owns a graphic design business. And I told him how I work with leaders around creating dynamic cultures so that people can unhide and thrive and belong, and shared a little bit of my journey of hiding for 25 years. Steve, he immediately put his head down and said, I don't tell anyone this. He said, I didn't go to college. And I said, well, why are you hiding that? He said, because I'm so afraid that if I tell someone I didn't go to college, they won't think I'm smart enough. They won't think I'm a good business person. And yet here I have the successful business. Mm-hmm. Every time that college conversation comes up, I just want to leave the room. I look for the nearest exit. So people are hiding all the time. The second thing that I found about hiding is that it's exhausting.
Right.
It takes a toll on our mental and physical health. And the third thing is that it's lonely and that most of us think that we're the only ones hiding. Yet we know it's universal, it's exhausting, and it's lonely. And so those are the three things that I have found about this hiding part, and that you can't always spot it because that's how people live. And it's part of the secrets that we keep about ourselves.
So how then, Ruth, as a business leader, do you go about creating an environment where hiding becomes a thing of the past, where we can provide a safe environment for people to come out of hiding, where it's no longer necessary? What are some of the things that people could do to help with that?
Yeah, my advice, and it's such a good, juicy question. This is one that I love because what you're hitting on, Steve, is that leadership piece and that leaders have to go first. Because in order to create culture and to change culture, we know that leaders are responsible. As a leader, I often delegated culture. I created culture committees. I created team retreats with having everyone else do it. But culture was, as a leader, my responsibility. And so sometimes I got that wrong. And so as a leader, your owning culture is the first step. The second step is being willing to be vulnerable yourself and to model that behavior for your team, to show the parts of you that I do a lot of fireside chats with executives as a place to start to say, let's model for your team what being vulnerable looks like by you sharing something that you may have hidden in your career journey where you felt like you had to hide and it was holding you back. And what it allows then is for employees to say, wow, if they're willing to share that, they're willing to create that space for them to be vulnerable. They're willing to create that space for us. And then the third piece is creating a manifesto or a mantra in your workplace that leaders are owning in terms of creating that place for people to show up as their best selves, Steve, not their authentic selves, because I'm not sure workplaces are ready for that. But how can you show up as your best self so that you get the support you need to get the job done? And leaders are in charge of that and owning that.
And what has been the reaction for the majority of leaders? I mean, you know, some of the things you're talking about there, I can imagine people listening to this and thinking, well, I don't know that I'm ready to expose that, you know, in front of my organization or my team or whatever it might be. So, you know, we've got a situation here, right, where we're saying the leader needs to display leadership. And yet, how do you get the leader to a place where they're sufficiently comfortable, secure, whatever it might be, to be able to expose that?
Yeah, it's often through private coaching with leaders that I work on that with them, is the space around telling their story, thinking about acknowledging, because I guess there's also a nuance here, Steve, that we're talking about, which is, it's not about leaders sharing their dirty details of their life. That's not the space of hiding, right? It's not, that's, and that's not, we're not interested in that. I've had enough people tell me, I don't want my leader to tell me more about their lives because they tell me too much already. No, it's about creating the space as a leader to say, hey, here's where I may not be as available to you because I have something going on in my life. Here's where I may need you to understand that I haven't always felt like I had all the answers. Here's where I needed you to understand how to bring you in to get new ideas because I'm out of them. That's the space that we're thinking about. So doing the work ahead of time is important. And for leaders, it's about, there's four steps. I mean, there's four steps of unhiding in general, but as leader, when I think about leaders, it's acknowledging first, what is it that has been holding you back, right? So you taking a pause to think about understanding your differences, understanding what you think about differences, and acknowledging what is it that holds you back from connecting with your team. Acknowledge it. The second step is inviting one or two people from your senior team into your circle so that you can start to have those conversations as an executive team, as an ELT or an EMT. And then it's about building community. Then it's about starting to share out your story. But at each level, there are also pauses to take of, this is not an overnight process where all of a sudden somebody hears this conversation we're having, Steve, and says tomorrow, oh, I'm going to unhide tomorrow. That is not the way this works because that sets it up for people to be afraid and to have retaliation. It's funny. I was talking to a woman recently and she said, I love this concept of hiding. I love the work that you're doing, Ruth. And as a leader, I will never unhide to my team. And I said, okay, why? And she said, because I don't trust them.
Right.
And it got me into the space of thinking, Steve, that either she has the wrong team or she's the wrong leader. Because if we can't trust our teams, why are we in this business? Because that's our job, is to build teams that trust us, that work with us, that get us to our next level in terms of a company. And so how do we create those spaces? And it's by leaders going first and being vulnerable.
Right. Some good points there. I mean, I think as well, you know, if I look at it from the security industry standpoint, we hear a lot about burnout. We hear a lot about stress. We hear a lot about people not having the time, the ability perhaps to build work-life balance that is appropriate for the stage in their life that they're at. And you know, we have to accept that that changes, doesn't it, as you go through the different stages. You know, sometimes if you're having children, you're going to want to spend less time in work than when they're older and they've gone off to college or studied work on their own. So I think that there is, particularly in the security space, still a lot of fear around disclosure that, you know, you're having a tough time or things perhaps aren't going as well because you have to always put up this front. So what are some of the benefits? You know, let's look at the positives here. What are some of the benefits that you have seen that perhaps could be applied to the industry I've just described from unhiding?
Sure. And I think it's interesting. There's a piece that I'll add to that, which is there is a privilege in being able to unhide. I recognize that in terms of being able, whether you're in the securities industry or in a different industry, because there are still in 2024 reasons that people would be fearful and for good reason be fearful of sharing parts of themselves, right?
Right.
For retaliation, et cetera. I think where I've seen the benefit and the other side is the retention increases. Like people feel better about the place that they work because they don't feel like they have to hide that part of themselves. They feel like this is a company who understands me. I'm going to stay longer. They feel more engaged with their peers because they're not hiding. I had a man who shared with me that he didn't talk in meetings because of a stutter. And imagine that, right? There's an individual performance piece, right? So he's holding back. There's a team piece because he doesn't feel connected to his team and his team doesn't feel connected to him because they're thinking, they're making assumptions about his ability or his interest in being a part of the team. The engagement piece suffers when we're hiding. It increases when we unhide because people feel more connected to each other. When I share with you about my disability, my limb difference, you can then relax your shoulders and say, oh, she's not perfect. She's like, I'm perfect, right? But she's not perfect in that she has challenges and she has other things, but she has a uniqueness. And you're able to then sit there and say, wow, what is it that's unique about me that I can now share that I feel like I have to be perfect all the time? That's the engagement piece. And then I think critical to business, whether it's the securities business again or other business, where I've seen it really adopt. And it was Steve Jobs who said this not so long ago. And actually the person who followed him, Tim Cook, who said, we know that businesses, when people feel safe to be themselves, are more innovative and creative. That's the key to this unhiding, is that it will drive your business growth because people are not holding back their different perspectives and experiences. They're actually sharing new ideas and being creative and innovative. That's where I've seen the other side. I've also seen it work for leaders because they don't feel like they have to keep that old school leadership mentality. And I guess the other piece to that, as we're adding in, is where I've seen it is we have a group now of millennials and Gen Zers who almost are demanding that we talk about mental health and that we talk about these ideas, right, in a different way than we ever have before. And so as a leader who is adopting to Gen Z and millennials and the upcoming generations, we are required to be vulnerable in a different way than we ever have before. And so this is the time.
So some real tangible benefits there that you've highlighted. I still think for, you know, quite a few people listening to this, perhaps it's a scary place to go. So let's see if we can help people a little bit here. What are some of the first steps that you think somebody's listening to this and they're thinking, yeah, okay, I get it. I can see there might be tangible benefits, but you know, it's a big first step for me to take. What are some of the things that they could do?
Absolutely. It is not overnight, like we said before. It's not an overnight process where you flip a switch and then tomorrow you think, I'm going to unhide everything about myself. I'm going to go into work. That's not safe. That is not what I'm advocating at all. The first step is acknowledging, taking a pause. I call it, Steve, self-centered work, right? Not being self-centered in a bad way, but being centered on yourself of what is holding me back? What's holding me back in my career? What's holding me back in relationship? What's holding me back from myself? Starting there, I use the methods of therapy. I use the methods of journaling. I use the methods of meditation to just take a pause in our lives to say, what is holding me back? Where am I hiding part of myself to fit in for fear of judgment and fear of rejection? Take that inventory or that audit on yourself. Acknowledge it. That's the first step, is acknowledging it. The second step, once you've done that, and I have a place even on my website, Steve, where I have people share their stories of hiding. Mm-hmm. Because it's when you've written it down or said it out loud to yourself, you can't unsee it. It becomes part of this dialogue. The second is, after people hear this podcast and are thinking about acknowledging that space and what it is that's holding them back, the second step becomes inviting in one person. I'm not talking about an army of people. I'm not talking about going on a podcast. Inviting in one person to share your secret with, to say, hey, I heard this podcast and I was thinking about this woman who said she hid for 25 years and what have I been hiding? And I wanted to share it with you. And I imagine, Steve, when your listeners hear that second step of inviting someone in, there is a go-to person, somebody that comes into mind of somebody that you'd want to connect with, right? And share that with. It's your go-to. It could be a best friend. It could be a manager. It could be a partner. It's someone that you trust who has good listening skills. I think of a checklist. Good listening skills, has empathy, and also asks questions, is curious, and is willing to share something about themselves. So that second step becomes inviting someone in. The third step is building out your community. The beauty of the internet today is that with all its pros and cons, the pro is that you can find someone who also may be dealing with something very similar to you. It's how I found a group of people with limb differences just like mine. Steve, I went through my entire life thinking I was alone on my journey of limb difference. I didn't realize, I thought I invented hiding, by the way. I mean, that tells you something. I got so into thinking I was the only one hiding. And then I found a group of people with limb differences just like mine. And I found out I didn't invent hiding. They were there too. They understood it. And we were also able to be role models for younger people coming up. So it was this really powerful shared experience. That's the community piece. And we can find it just by Googling it. And if people can't find it, your listeners can't find it, they should just reach out to me and ask, because there are ways that I can help people find those communities. And then the fourth and final step, Steve, is sharing your journey. And again, it doesn't have to be going on a podcast like this or going out in front of audiences like I do or working with executives. It can be with just a few close people. Because once you've shared your story with someone, they then can see themselves in your story and start on their own journey of unhiding. That's the power. It becomes a flywheel or it becomes a loop. So it's acknowledging, inviting, building, and finally sharing out your story.
Some really good tips there to get started. And I think the other thing that has certainly come across, Ruth, is this ability that you've demonstrated to actually come at this from this position of having been there yourself. I mean, you know, 25 years is a very, very long time. So I think for anybody listening to this who feels perhaps that they've been trying to deal with things on their own for, you know, a period of time, it's never too late, I guess, to unhide, as you put it. And certainly within the business context, again, you made the point that we do exist today within a very wide spread of different generations, different thoughts, different perspectives. And so often I hear people saying that they're struggling trying to get these different generations to work more collaboratively together because, you know, they're different. And perhaps this is a way to try to unblock some of that as well. So some really good insights, some very good tangible benefits that you've raised, and certainly I think some great first steps that people can take. So thank you very much for sharing that. As you've said, you know, if anybody listening to this is particularly touched by some of the things you've said, you're available to via your website and all that kind of stuff, so they can reach out to you and go into it in very much more detail and perhaps unhide themselves and get a bit more confidence in how they might deal with some of the issues we've been touching on. So thank you very much for doing that, Ruth.
Absolutely. No, unhiding is the key to connection. And now that we are facing and we are all in this pandemic of loneliness, an epidemic of loneliness, unhiding is the key to connection. It will make you a stronger leader. It will make you a stronger employee, and it will drive results for business. That's what we're all about right now, is how do we drive connection? How do we drive connection with each other? And given what we've all been through over the last 4 years, this is the time.
Fantastic. And that's a great point to leave it on, Ruth. So thank you very much indeed for joining me on the podcast and sharing your insights. It's been great.
Thank you, Steve, for having me as a guest.
Our thanks to this week's guest, Ruth Rathblot. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to rate and review the podcast. And we'd be pleased if you'd consider sharing the episode. To become a member, get in touch with Steve directly at steve.durbin@securityforum.org or on LinkedIn at Steve Durbin. Check out all our media and resources. All of it is there to support you at securityforum.org. Don't miss the ISF Analyst Insight podcast, sharing conversations with members about the real-world applications of ISF research. The ISF podcast is produced by Talkbox Productions and Tavia Gilbert. Thanks for listening.